Welcome to Adventures Anonymous. You might be wondering why you are here. I sure know I am. Join us week by week as five adventurers and a dungeon master raid their drinks cabinets and gather round to play a weekly game of Dungeons & Dragons. Before we take a deep dive straight into the game itself, a few of us thought we'd sit around and shoot the shit, talking about what it is we do and how the hell we found ourselves in this place. So without further ado, grab a drink, sit back, and join Chris, Chanel, and myself for a fireside chat. Enjoy.
I guess if we just give a quick intro to like who the different characters are.
Okay.
And I think that
otherwise you're going to be watching and listening. Otherwise you're going to be listening, and you won't necessarily kind of buy into the characters because you'll have so many questions.
I think another kind of I don't know if it's a big thing, but like another point I guess that we should kind of address with the kind of intro episode before we kind of get into the actual story of where we are is almost like setting the tone. So like there's a lot of, I mean, AJ probably knows more than I do, but there's a lot of like D&D podcasts, and there's even more like D&D series and stuff where people just play D&D and record it. Ours started as, you know, we're just a bunch of people who like to get a little bit drunk, and we thought D&D would be like the next fun thing to give it a go. And then we've kind of gone from there. I kind of like the idea of saying like this is like the first campaign we've ever played. Like we're not like experts by any means.
Amateur D&D.
Yeah.
Amateur D&D professional drinkers.
I was just about to say that, but I didn't want to shout it over you because I knew it'd fuck up the audio. Yeah. Amateur D&D players, professional drunks.
Or do you do professional drunks, amateur D&D?
I think you do professional after, because amateur, you go from amateur to professional. Yeah.
Legend.
Let's give this a whirl. Let's see what happens. I'm going to attempt to freestyle a bunch of shit. This may turn into absolute nonsense. Who knows what might happen? Is this the beginning of the podcast? Have we already started recording?
Jesus Christ.
No, what?
This is happening. Go on.
This is just hurtful. I've not nearly drunk enough for this kind of abuse.
Do you want to slow clap you into this? Come on.
I don't know why I agreed to do this. I really So yes, a quick introduction to Adventurers Anonymous, amateur adventurers, professional drinkers. The party being made up of four main protagonists: Hanash, a half-orc human fighter with anger issues; half green, half insane, all feral; Belciar, a dragonborn sorcerer, a one-time disgraced member of the Wizard Sleeve, a prestigious group of wizards who threw him out for illegal use of tyromancy. He's been practicing as a children's party entertainer ever since. The third member of the group, Tatty Bojangles, a disgraced Special Forces gnome ranger whose one true love, Lady the Wolf. And last but not least, a whiny masturbator called Aristobulus, a human cleric who most deities have distanced themselves from. No one's entirely sure what religion he represents, but he is a man of the cloth for sure. Our four adventurers originally met pre-campaign in a one-shot set in the fictitious city of Nutbush. The four of them having just burnt down their local pub, they were sentenced to death at the local court, but in a bid to avoid their sentence and their demise, they were given the opportunity to do community service in the local sewers. Jumping at the opportunity, the four alcoholics soon sobered up and took an adventure into Nutbush City sewers, where they were joined by their guide, Otto von Dandyflower, sadly, due to a freak set of bad dice rolls, Otto von Dandyflower instantly died, being chopped in half. The adventuring party going on many adventures in the sewers, becoming firm friends, managing to derail an evil cult of chaos rats. They discovered that they actually had a penchant for adventuring. That there was a one-shot that turned into somehow a year's worth of D&D campaign. We decided to very lazily, I say we, it was me, very lazily borrow from Critical Role's universe of Wild Mountain Exandria and decided to place our campaign in there. Some time passed and the group of adventurers received a note. Having found a new local watering hole, they received a note from their absent friend Aristobulus, who for reasons couldn't make the first episode. So due to a lazy plot hook, he left them a note saying that he had boarded a ship in the pirate town of Port de Mali. The three remaining adventurers jumping on a cart and heading with a farmer to the bustling port town of de Mali, where they instantly managed to get themselves blind, drunk, and robbed, forming an unlikely alliance with a man they met in an illegal card game called Albert P. Gibberstop. They took to the high seas, pretty much destroying everything they could find and daubing the immortal name Crunkfuckers on the side of their ship. That name would stick in infamy and become the name of these band of merry adventurers. They've had many adventures across the year. By the time you join them at this point, they've achieved a lot. They've broken the law in many towns and cities. But a brief synopsis would include them breaking up a public hanging in Port de Mali, where they accidentally managed to join a underground group of vigilantes called the Almighty Order of the Teslit Cloak. Whilst their reasons for joining this underground group of vigilantes may have seemed completely altruistic, it was in fact merely so that they could get a platinum membership card, giving them access to the bottomless brunch that was available in the vigilante clubhouse. Having met the leader of the Almighty Order of the Teslit Cloak, his name was McBeany, they were given their first mission as initiates, their first mission being to take a letter all the way across Exandria to the very top of the Graying Wildlands in a village called Palebank Village. Not knowing jack shit about the topography or landscape, they decided to do the only thing that sensible people would do, which is waste an entire episode shopping. Many hours were spent wandering around the streets and shops of Port de Mali, terrorizing shopkeepers and stealing goods. Some particular purchases included hundreds of golds worth of cold weather clothing, which they never wore again, and Belciar purchasing a very expensive yo-yo. Not really knowing how to make it across the map and not wanting to waste time, they decided to do the only thing that sensible adventurers would do, which is book themselves on a giant airship. Once on the giant airship, they instantly took umbrage at their crappy quarters that they were offered as part of the ticket price and decided to blag their way into the bridal suite, the four adventurers staying in the very sexy heart-shaped bed of the bridal suite. Having taken turns sleeping in the bed, the adventurers heard a scream and a kerfuffle in the night. Hearing people running around outside, they managed to embroil themselves in a two-episode extravaganza murder mystery, which I won't bore you with the details of right now, but basically involved them completely treading on all the evidence, managing to usurp the course of justice, and meeting a troll called Barry, who was a CSI crime scene painter. Not that his painting skills were up to much. This managed to take them as far as the Dunrock Mountains, halfway up the continent of Exandria, where they managed to pull an emergency stop, found the serial killer, flung him to his death out of the top of the airship, and in themselves managed to get themselves embroiled in a criminal case with the dwarfs who were currently living under Dunrock Mountain. Again, a long story short, Hanash was brought before the Supreme Court and taken to jail in the dwarven city of Grimbalir. Instead of actually going through the episode which I had painstakingly and lovingly written them, which was going to be a Kramer versus Kramer courtroom drama, the group couldn't be fucked with this and decided more to go for a prison break style episode. Breaking out of prison, they then hired a local dwarf guide well, who was actually a cleaner, called Ashabati. Taken to the underground tunnels underneath the Dunrock Mountains, they found many a happy adventure, meeting all sorts of protagonists and evil ne'er-do-wells, but making firm friends with a slightly dim-witted rock troll called Nigel, who ate everything in sight, including many dwarfs, pausing only to shit out a dwarf lantern very painfully, which he had accidentally swallowed along with a dwarf. Making their way out on the other side of the Dunrock Mountains, they had many more adventures, fighting bands of roving goblins and making friends with a local bunch of courgette farmers called Ollo and Lothar, who took them to the local village called Blooming Grove Village. Here, they made friends with all sorts of people, limited to, but not including, several lazy Critical Role characters like Caduceus Clay. In their adventures under the mountain, they picked up a mysterious orb, which they found in a box in a barge, which they sailed out of the mountain through an underground river. This orb they carried with them for quite a while. Wondering what it was, they asked Caduceus where they may find a man who was wise enough and had enough magical power to tell them. This man, Caduceus advised them, was called Brannigan the Brown. Totally not a lazy riff off Lord of the Rings, because I was caught short trying to name a character. But Brannigan the Brown was the man who would be able to give them information. Leaving Nigel behind to play with the children of Blooming Grove, they set off through the Savalier Woods, a wood of pure evil and corruption where decay and death was at every turn. Wandering through these woods, they realized they were being pursued. Hiding in a hedgerow, they saw their pursuers overtake them and soon realized they were being tracked by a group of elven rangers. In one of the worst impressions of four men trying to hide in a hedge, they managed to give themselves away because their wolf was leaving a trail of semen behind her, having been banged by every dog in Palebank Village. The elfin rangers soon caught up with them and took them to their camp, where they met the leader of the elves, Tessarion. Tessarion, being a man of regality and much fineness, very much irked at the alcoholic and grubby ways of our four adventurers, but realized the true power of the orb which they had. He revealed to them that it was, in fact, one of the orbs of Tartarus, one of six orbs, when combined, could undo the corruption of the Savalier Wood and possibly give the elves back the original habitat with which they had once enjoyed. Not entirely happy with letting one of the orbs out of his sight, Tessarion agreed that his nephew, the one-time sexy elf ranger Theolian, who had proved himself to be the coolest NPC ever created in all of D&D, was to go with the group, who instantly set off on their way to meet Brannigan the Brown. On the way, they were ambushed, and a fire was set, which burnt across the woodlands. Theolian going missing, the group ran for their lives across the woods, dodging wild animals as they sprinted through the woods. And sadly, Belsiar's best friends, the otters, were firstly murdered by an errant ice knife and then burnt to death in the flames. Not really having enough time to stop and grieve, the group ran on as Belsiar's tears evaporated in the flames behind them, making their way all the way to the edge of the ruins of Mazmir. They finally met Brannigan the Brown, their one-time savior, who was going to tell them about the orbs of Tartarus. Brannigan the Brown, turning out to be a massive racist and an incredibly grumpy man, told them that Theolian had in fact been kidnapped by a group of local Tabaxi raiders called the Nightback Clan. Many shenanigans ensued, which I don't have time to tell you now. Maybe one day you will in fact hear those adventures from the gang themselves. But where we pick up this adventure, they are setting off to the Nightback Clan. They are setting off to the Nightback Clan to attempt to see if they can find their one-time guide and friend and sexy elf Theolian, who has all the best equipment and has been a firm friend to them. Not knowing much more than the fact, the location that the Tabaxi are hiding in a treetop village, we join the gang as they seek to win back the day, find their guide, and hopefully pump Brannigan the Brown for more information about the remaining orbs of Tartarus, which are rumored to be spread around the ruins of Melasmia. For now, that is all I can tell you. Did I do a good job with this summary? No. Is it the summary we deserve? Probably. But sit back, enjoy, and join us on this adventure. That is all.
Woo! That works. I like it.
Very well done.
Yeah.
You're like a very Tory Stephen Fry.
Fuck off.
That's it. Yes.
You have to troll him. You have to bring him back down to earth.
Yeah. You can't do it on your own, Janelle.
Exactly.
I almost did that without too many fuck-ups and then couldn't say the word clan.
You did very well.
That was good, because you wrapped it back up, so now I won't have to painstakingly find the right word in amongst all those yeah. fucked up words. Yeah, that works. I think that's really good.
Oh, Jesus Christ. God knows what that sounds like. That should keep the bastards happy for a few moments.
And keep me happy. It gives me enough time to edit it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of us have learned a lot about D&D over the course of the year, but also a lot about timing and comedy and things like that. None of us ever thought that we'd be recording this when we started. This was just a bit of fun, really. The only reason I really did this is because Chris asked me to, and I couldn't let him down. He looked all sad. He looked like he needed a friend. And he said...
It's just what my face looks like every day. You don't have to say I look sad or I look like I needed a friend. You could just say he looked like Chris.
Cummings face fucked Dickensian chimney sweep.
Oh, God.
Brick.
Chimney sweeps alone. I don't know anything about D&D, but I am a die-hard podcast fan.
I don't know. I think it was something that really worked in lockdown. I've always loved D&D. I've always been a big fan of anything fancy. I'm a ginormous nerd. I've also really missed doing improv comedy. You can't really do that in lockdown and COVID. So being able to dick around, creating characters, doing silly voices, trying to find comedy has been really, really important to me over the last year. But also it's given us a community of people, an opportunity to make new friends, an opportunity to have a laugh, but more importantly, an opportunity to escape the dullness of everyday life for a couple of hours in a make-believe world of nonsense and alcoholism.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a sucker for role-playing games. I'd never tried D&D before. And, you know, me, Matt, Lewis, and other Chris, like, we kind of experienced D&D through the lens of other shows that, you know, they might have like a one-off special where all the characters play D&D, or podcasts where people have like a regular game going amongst like a live show or something like that. So yeah, I remember when AJ first started at Born and Raised, and we were just chatting random shit over a curry one night, and we were chatting about Harmontown or something, and AJ said, "Oh yeah, I'm a DM. Like I play D&D all the time. Let's get something going."
And the timing of it was really nice as well, because I was actually I'd done a bit of DMing, I'd done some one shots, and I was also a player in another campaign. But that campaign was coming to an end, and there was an almost seamless end to one campaign as one thing ended. And that campaign, there was a big line drawn under it, and I never sadly played another game of it. But this one kind of picked up. So it was a really nice kind of tonic for me to jump from one to the other. I do sometimes miss playing. I don't get to play very often as a character, and I miss the kind of continuity of that. But this, for me, is like the ultimate privilege. And do you know what? This was only ever supposed to be a one shot, and with all one shots, there was too much of it, and it turned into a three shot. And I think it was a three shot. I mean, two or three shots.
Yeah, two and a half to three shots. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people enjoyed it. And, you know, I've always, I've loved writing and creativity. So I created these four complementary characters that were just silly. They literally were just made in midair. And because the four of you had never really played before, and I wasn't sure how nerdy or fantasy orientated you were I made these four complementary characters that I thought would riff well together, all of which were alcoholics, all of which had pain in their lives, not without, and I'm sure these guys at some point will give you a proper breakdown of their own characters. But yeah, I love the idea, and I always love the idea of having like an ex-gnome special forces. When people think of special forces, they always think of Andy McNabb or like, you know, Arnie in Commando or something like that. But the idea of this like rock hard gnome with PTSD who hasn't really integrated very well into society and does that thing, you know, that well-worn and understood thing of the military man who finds it hard to integrate back into society. So he finds this beautiful relationship with a wolf who's his kind of confidant and life partner. And, you know, there's a lot of pain in that and a lot of really interesting room for you to explore. And you've, you know, you've gone all around that. But also, you know, there were other interesting, you know, the idea of a half orc. And I've always found it really interesting in the way D&D kind of mirrors reality. And there's, you know, the racial tensions that we see every day in society play out in a sort of weird way in D&D, in the way that, you know, people look at the different races and stuff, and this idea of a half orc and the orcs being massively distrusted because they're a violent, angry race. You know, orcs as such, as a fantasy concept, have never exactly been known well for, you know, being controlled individuals. They're, you know, they're driven by anger and vitriol. So the idea of kind of Hanash, half his lineage is this angry, furious thing, and, you know, the other half is a bit of an unknown, and we're still unpacking that. But it's, you know, really interesting, kind of, you know, as he's a burnt out fighter. And then Belsiar, a disgrace, you know, everyone knows the sort of concept of someone who's been disgraced from an organization. And, you know, he was disgraced from a magical organization. Of course, it was called the Wizard Sleeve because I was lazy. But this idea that, you know, he hit rock bottom, having been a wizard, he turns out to be a children's entertainer. You can sort of imagine him with all this power. You know, we've seen him. He has the sort of ability to kill. He's a very calm character. But when push comes to shove, he will do what needs to be done. And that usually involves accidentally injuring his teammates. But, you know, I love this idea that there's this guy playing children's birthday parties, and, you know, he's making flowers appear in midair and lights twinkle, but he's, you know, he has the capability to accidentally wipe all these kids out with an errant ice knife or something, you know, or if he has an allergy to the birthday cake, he could like immolate all the children or something. I like this kind of, again, there's a nice kind of pain to him, and that would only leave Aristobulus. And I mean, who doesn't love the lazy trope of the traveling religious man that, you know, people are inherently distrustful of? And I think for him, he had the weirdest side hook. I think he had been abused as a child by an owlbear whilst on a school camping trip. And he'd never quite recovered from it. And, you know, his parents didn't know what to do with him. He was a recluse. He started mumbling and talking to himself. So they carted him off to a monastery, which is, you know, what all parents do when they can't deal with their children. So Aristobulus had sort of become this monastic figure, but obviously he didn't want to be there. He was pushed there by his parents. Is he a bit jittery around wildlife? Yes, because, you know, he was raped by an owlbear. But he's still out there. And, you know, is he the ultimate team player? No. But is he good value for money? Yes. Is he a massive deviant? Yeah. Does he get the job done? Sure. But, you know, I think all of them together make a wonderful kind of, I'm going to use a shit word now, like synergy. But, you know, they all blend together to make this really interesting group of people who are all fucking selfish. Everyone, except Belsiar, who's a winning personality. Every single one of them's got their own kind of aims and their own kind of thing, but together they make a lovely group of people who, you know, I can't speak for the group themselves because they are their own thing, but, you know, I think they'd die for each other. They would go on, and it's going to be interesting. They've got, you know, these overarching mega themes and goals that they're trying to achieve. God knows what it'll be like when they achieve them. You know, I don't know how long this campaign will run for. I've got an idea of where I want it to go. When it first started, I very much pitched it as a sort of monster of the week, or you know, it was very frenetic. And I'm not going to lie, I just made it up and pulled it out of my ass using improv. So every week, you know, 1 week it was a murder mystery, and the next it was a puzzle, and you know, there was, you had to kind of stop a public hanging or something, and you know, it's very much whatever the hell came off the top of my head, and then it sort of wove into a bit of a narrative, and I started actually giving it a bit of structure and building on it and giving you some long-term goals, and so it is, you know, it's grown organically. But I'm curious, in the end I've pushed it down one avenue, but I'm interested to see how the characters push back on the narrative and change it as we go. So, you know, there's plenty of room and scope going forward. And I realize I've just been talking solidly for 10 minutes, which is what I do.
I realized at a certain point that you were still in the middle of a speech, and I was just like, I'm just going to mute myself and let him do his thing for a little while.
I am also available to write your wedding speeches. You know, yeah. Your funeral, things, bar mitzvahs,
football talks.
Football talk. Yes, it's true. Yeah, it's been a real, like, been a real privilege for me, and also, like, what a form of escape in the miserable time of COVID and lockdown. You know, to be able to dick about, and also, you know what? It's been an absolute honor and privilege. And you know, there've been times where we've been able to invite family and friends and people like that, and just allow them to piss about and have a laugh in a sort of safe space. I've always tried to make it a safe space where there's no right or wrong answers. People can just come and have a bit of fun, really. And the more you put in, the more you get out.
It's very welcoming as well. And I think that's what made it really easy. The fact that I've been to like a physical D&D like game, and it was really, really intimidating and very, like, it wasn't a positive experience at all. Like, both as a human being and, you know, as a female, it was like the shittiest thing humanly imaginable. And so to kind of come into a group of people who were so welcoming, and there were no right or wrong answers, I think that really took the pressure off. It was such a lovely experience, and it was such a kind of nice, freeing, cathartic, creative experience. It was really lovely.
I think that's like one of the things that, like, I mean, AJ kind of touched on it a little bit, like, you get out of it what you put into it. And you know, some of us just we love the weekly sessions, but we, you know, we're not gonna like start putting in any more than that. I guess I've done a little bit around like Tati's backstory, and I like having that kind of character to jump into, and like AJ said, like having his kind of backstory and like his overarching goals, I guess, is kind of nice to lean on when there's kind of a bit of a lull in the action or something. Just a little bit of like a moment of contemplation for him is just him like sitting and talking to Lady about shit that's going on, and not really expecting much of a response, but because that's just the life he's used to. Like, he just does shit and then talks to Lady about it.
It's been really interesting, and it's been a learning experience for me, because as much as I had experience of D&D and had experience of doing one shots and being a dungeon master, and I've obviously got vast experience of just making up shit doing improv. So I've never had a problem just making a character up in midair, and I've never had a problem committing to a stupid or funny kind of thing. But learning to read the room has been really interesting, and learning to see when the group are low energy or high energy, when, you know, having done God knows how many sessions of this now, 50 probably, somewhere around there, it's been really, really interesting to see. There's times where I can just sit back and let you guys just dictate your own little adventure, and I'll just nudge it left and right occasionally. And then there's times where you can see you're all knackered and tired, and you've had long days of work, and I'm like, I'll give you a really strong framework and I'll push you towards the goal. And as soon as the magic starts happening, I'll step back. But there've been times, and many, many, many times, where I've tightly written set pieces and things, and you guys have fucked it up royally by just making a tangential decision. Like the courtroom is a classic thing. I wrote this kind of Kramer versus Kramer, or you know, A Few Good Men, you know, almost Sorkin-esque. I was starting to sort of thresh out these statements, you know, against Hanash, and you know, I was all ready for that, and I thought it'd be really interesting. You know, I was like, I don't know jack shit about what a court case looks like on the inside, but how fun would it be in D&D? Because you know, there's no right or wrong. And yeah, you guys went a totally different way. You use the hat of disguise to disguise yourself as Under Baron Brock Damaroff, who was the guy who ran the mountain with the dwarfs, and you jailbroken. So instantly, I'm sitting there. It's 8 o'clock on a Wednesday or something. I've got all this information written down and, you know, behind my screen. And I'm suddenly like, oh, well, I guess it's prison break then. So I had to... I had to improvise all this stuff. I had to literally pull an episode of Prison Break out my ass. But those are sometimes the most fun episodes when, because you guys are at the helm, and when you feel like you're in control and it's not on rails and you're, you know, responsible for your own decisions. And I'm not going to lie, you know, you've not seen the full repercussions of all of those things. There are long-term repercussions that happen in the campaign and the story. You can't jailbreak someone out of a dwarven mountain city and fuck off and expect, you know, not to make some waves. So it has been that kind of overarching thing as we've gone on trying to think, oh fuck, if this is true, what else is true? Which he said belching very attractively in the middle of a podcast. It's that classic improv thing. If you can, you know, the best way of doing improv is you find something, a nugget. And you know, the best way of improvised thinking is you build up very quickly and you say, if this is true, what else surrounding it is true? You know, like if this character is a murderer, well, what else is true about it? How did he become a murderer very quickly? You know, has he got any friends? Murderers keep friends? Do they have friends? I don't know. So you start building up a sort of surrounding bunch of facts, and so it's been the same with the campaign. You know, if you break out of an underground dwarven city in prison and, you know, murderize a bunch of people and imitate the underbaron of the city, you know, what else is true? What else is going to happen? And so I've had this picture, and you guys have just smeared your way across it, ruining it, and my masterpiece has literally turned into a kind of like Jackson Pollock pebble dashed with your own alcoholic fecal matter. But you know, I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I think it would be so boring if it was tightly scripted or whatever. And you know, sometimes the humor's probably gone too far, and that's going to be interesting in a podcast to see how that goes. But I think the thing that really helps as well is the four or five of us all have very similar senses of humor. I don't think it would work if we didn't actually laugh at each other or find each other funny in the slightest. But, and again, this is a really interesting point. I mean, I'll let the listener decide whether it's interesting. It could be fucking boring for all I know. But you can play like any kind of game. You can, you know, same with tennis, I suppose. You can play it any which way you want. You can play it seriously. You can play it for fun. And we happen to be a group of people who are interested in just having a bit of fun. But you can legalistically play D&D, and I have done before, where it's, you know, very stickler to the rules and very kind of taciturn and very classic fantasy without much scope for being silly. But for my money, the silly moments, which are almost serendipitous at times in our campaigns, because they're just people dicking around, trolling each other, lead to these beautiful moments. Like Tati, when you got dropped in a vat of stew, that turned into a 20-minute survival montage of you swimming around in a giant vat of stew, equally burning alive and drowning in chicken stew, which, you know, I didn't plan for. But I had to, you know, use the mechanics of D&D, and it turned into this great little kind of like race for to save the gnome from burning to death or drowning in chunks of chicken. It was, and that's where a lot of the fun lives, in these kind of stupid moments of dumbassery and shithousing that
It's a relief, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I guess that's always been the kind of guiding tone of our story. Like, we can all put our own stamp on our characters, but the overarching tone of the campaign, of the story that we inhabit, is always going to be that we are just these fucking maniacs who are stupidly alcoholic and stupidly selfish in our ways of being, and the universe reflects that. Like, you know, like when Caduceus Clay pointed us to Brannigan the Brown, and we, you know, we all had in our heads that this guy was going to be like this wise old wizard who was going to help us, like, who was going to put us on a path and point us towards the next objective. No, it just sounds like he's like this really crazy, old, grumpy, racist wizard who turned out to be the absolute fucking worst. And that's been hilarious to navigate. He's like, he's such a like combative presence when you're around him that you can't help but just be like, how is this character real?
But then, right, okay, so that's a really prime example of me creating a character. So I knew what I wanted that character to be. I'd sketched out some basic, well, sketched out, I'm not an artist. I'd made some mood boards of what I wanted him to look like. Don't laugh at me like I'm a massive twat.
You this just said I didn't sketch him out, and then you said I made some mood boards.
Yeah. Mood boards.
Fuck off. He's very
he's basically that man that we saw at the fruit and veg store, isn't he?
Oh yeah. Do you know what? Sometimes life imitates art and art imitates life. So we were down in the old Castle Market in Sheffield. It's not called that anymore. God knows what it's called. Affectionately near Crime Alley. And there's this guy. He's just like the paradigm of shit greengrocer. He's this angry fat man in a wheelchair,
yeah,
smoking
a
cigarette.
Yeah. He's always selling strawberries. Yeah.
Yes. But like, yes.
I made the mistake of like looking at him, and so did Chanel, and he just like, boy, your veg, get your strawberry, little love. And you're just like, Jesus Christ, you're just a trope of a character. And you could sort of like, his voice is just like, you like your strawberries, I'll sell you strawberries, buy my strawberries, or I'll fucking haunt you. He's just, and you're like, I want to make a character out of you. Sometimes you see things in real life and you're like, oh, one day, do you know what? I would love the gang to meet this kind of like wheelchair-bound, belligerent veg vendor. Veg vendor? There's a word for that. Greengrocer. I'm a wordsmith.
Two punnets a pound. Sorry, I can remember walking past him so many times when he used to work.
Hello, darling.
Can I lick your face? No, you can fuck off. Do you sell quince? I would like to buy quince jam. So there was a point to all of this before I derailed it with a story about Reg the Green Rose. Brannigan the Brown. Yeah, before you start fucking laying into me about having a mood board for Brannigan the Brown. Right. So sometimes I spec out these characters and I roughly knew who I wanted him to be. And then you guys turn up and you're just massive twats to him. And I'm like, okay. So I'm thinking, well, he's living on the edge of some fucking ruins of an elven city, at the edge of a corrupted wood, in a small hut on his own. What's he going to be like? You know, he's going to be a misanthrope. He's not going to have had a huge amount of social interaction. Anyone who has met him is probably going to be only there for treasure hunting, or lost, or a tabaxi. Yes, he turned out to be a little bit racist. Did we mean that? Probably not. But you guys were just twats to him. Oh, and
it's not like he was an endangered creature trapped, suspended from the ground in a wooden kind of hanging receptacle, and then he was stabbed four times in the face, was it? You know, whilst trying to make friends. It's not like that happened.
I mean, maybe. I have no idea what you're alluding to. Oh, yes.
Is that you coughing out the blood?
Is your coughing out blood? This is all spoilers. I mean, if you don't want to receive spoilers, then definitely skip through that section.
All this shit is going to have to be like...
Not that bitter or anything, but having stabbed in the face four times. What's trying to make friends?
Making friends in the time of D&D is tough. So, you know, Branigan was this guy. He's living on his own in a little village. He's got a little garden. It's quite nice.
Is that someone's granddad?
He is not. He's a virgin.
Someone's racist granddad.
Branigan's a virgin. You know that yet? If you'd passed, if you'd got a higher nature check, you would have been able to tell he's a virgin. The signs were there. So, there's nothing grim about being a virgin.
Not a grim that you need a nature check to see whether he's a virgin.
Yeah.
I mean...
A gyno check.
I don't want to bring Branigan's hymen into this, but I don't think he has one. Anyway. Yeah, Branigan the Brown. Let's get back to Branigan the Brown. Right, this is... Why the fuck are we going on about, like, the virginal status of mythical... creatures that I made up in midair. Anyway, so we made him up. I made this character up. He could have been a nice guy, you know. He had a little garden, and the Adventures of Anonymous turn up, and I don't know why I'm talking like this. And they stay the night, and they go on first watch. I didn't fucking tell them to go on watch. I have no idea where they went on watch. If you stay in a hotel with a group of people, does one of you stand out the front on watch? So Tatty stays up outside Branigan the Brown's hut. Hears a rustling in the hedge next to it. Picks a fight with a creature, gets the rest of the gang up. They all murder the creature. Turns out to be Branigan's gardener.
Wow.
I mean, they literally murdered Branigan's gardener in cold blood. And by murdered, I mean they ripped him in half. I think Branigan's got a right to be a dick. I mean, if someone turned up at my parents' house, murdered our groundskeeper, you know, the orchard is going to go to shit. The orchard's going to go to shit. I mean, there's going to be a... It's going to be carnage. I mean, there's going to be no apple pie, no fresh blueberries. We don't have any blueberries in our orchard.
Apple turnover.
Strudel. I mean...
The chef can't make those now.
Exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. The live-in chef. Anyway, we digress. The reason Branigan the Brown is a world-class cunt is because you turned up, you were nothing but rude to him, you heckled him, and then better yet, yeah, they can't see you make that face on a podcast, Chris.
No. No.
You murdered his gardener. Do you know
his
how hard...
Friend.
Exactly. Do you know how hard it is to find a fucking gardener whilst living on the edge of a haunted wood next to the ruins of a long-past elven city? Pretty fucking hard.
Yeah, there was a bit of a giveaway moment when the gardener was called the Angel of Decay. Like, what's your gardener called?
Whoa!
It's not called the Angel of Decay.
Hold on.
Let's not.
Hang on. Right, this is a rich tapestry of fantasy, Gris. All right, a rich fucking tapestry of fantasy. If I just called him the Composter. You'd have told me I'd phoned it.
That would have been more sinister. That would have been, if you'd called him the gardener, that would have been way more sinister. I wouldn't have gone fucking near that.
I'm pretty sure there's a character in The Witcher 3 called, one of the DLCs called the gardener, who just wanders around with a spade, but, and murders people. I tried to find a fun fantasy frivolous way of having a gardener. So instead of having a compost, they had an angel of decay. Did you take the time to realize that? No. Did you ask anyone? No. You turned up. That's an Airbnb.
He came out of the woods that we were just fleeing from that had been on fire.
What about his family? He was sending the wages home to his wife in some far-flung city with his six children. They're going to starve to death.
The Angel of Decay, the other Angel of Decay, his wife, and the little cherubs of decay. They'll all have to go hungry this harvest season because he's dead. He's gone.
And Can I just point out as well,
You don't have to care.
for anyone who gives a shit at this point, it's not like they just murdered the gardener. They murdered the gardener, ripped him in half, then fucked up Brannigan's stew by dropping Tatty in it, and then on the way out the door, took the cloak off the back of his, like, they literally took the clothes off the back of the dead gardener. So, I mean, Brannigan's not going to be...
He gave me that. I didn't even ask for it. He gave me... Oh, let's be clear.
He gave me the clothes and then you murdered him.
No. The when we were leaving, after the Angel of Decay was already dead, when I was dropped into the stew, which was Brannigan, by the way. Once I got out, my clothes were soaked in stew, and I said to him, "Can I, you know, do you have something spare that I could take to maybe dry myself off with, or just like a spare set of clothes that I can change into?"
Yes, tiny person. Who murdered my only friend in the world? Here, take a spare set of clothes.
Let's be fair though. He didn't give me, you know, a quick pullover hoodie from round the, like, the backside of his wardrobe. He gave me a cape of flayed skin.
All right, let's just be clear here. He didn't give me a hoodie pullover. He lives on the edge of a blighted wood near the ruins of an elven city. There's not a fucking Gap outlet store. Like, he's not like, "Oh yeah, here's a little number."
ASOS still deliver though, pal.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Do you know how many fucking interviews he had to do on
Airbnb?
On Indeed? Like, no, not Airbnb. We've done that joke to death. Do you know how many fucking interviews, you know, he put adverts on Indeed or Monster.com or whatever, all the cool kids. I mean, did you even look Brannigan the Brown up on LinkedIn? Like, he must have, there's probably a sub episode somewhere where he's auditioning gardeners. And the first question the gardener asks is not, "Will I die brutally whilst coming out of a hedge in the middle of the night?" Like, no one saw that shit coming.
I mean, maybe that should be the first question that they ask, given that they live next to a corrupted forest.
Maybe the Angel of Decay just had a really weak bladder and went out for a piss. Like, he did live in a shack. They're not exactly renowned for, like, ensuite toilets.
I mean, he could have just pissed all over the plants. And that's natural fertilizer.
Maybe he did. Maybe he just took a massive shit all over the... I don't know how the Angel of Decay works. I don't make these rules up. But anyway, there you go. We've just zoomed right into a tiny thing that happened for about 10 minutes. And managed to just try and mine 45 minutes worth of conversation out of it. Which, you know, this is the level of, you know, gems that you're going to get at this point from this podcast. I mean, we could, you know, we could interrogate your actions to the nth degree. We could try and find some form of moral or ethical reason why you murdered an innocent person, but at the end of the day, it's because you're a bunch of belligerent alcoholics. But
yeah, that's true.
I'll let the episodes speak for themselves, quite frankly.
Yeah, we'll let the listeners be the judge.
I like the way that you guys are despicable twats, yet you managed to post-rationalize all of your life choices and try and make them look like they were for the greater good.
Just like alcoholics do.
Boom, deesh. And also, it is an interesting note. You know, we're all poor and we would very much like a sponsor. And, you know, if someone would like to sponsor us, I don't know, Alcoholics Anonymous or...
Bulmers.
I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous are going to sponsor us.
Why not? I mean,
I don't think our content is on the side of, shall we say, supporting an alcohol-free lifestyle. I think our sponsors would be more likely to be aviation gin.
That's very bold.
My favourite stat is when I did a deep dive and I wrote down all the characters that you guys had come across in 52 odd episodes and worked out that Hanash had slept with 1/10 of the cast. That was pretty damn impressive. And I don't think he needed alcohol for all of that, to be fair.
No. He's got game.
He's rolled high.
Yeah.
Don't be having a go at my I'm bringing my A game here. I've been put on the spot. Literally, I just shat a 20-minute monologue out of my ass.
I think that's going to be the whole episode. I think that's going to be the whole intro.
Ah, oh, Jesus. Really? Like, this is what, you know, my parents would be so proud that I used my really exorbitant private education to do this. You know, some of my peers went on to become politicians, actors, surgeons.
I'll say peers. Like,
nothing wrong with peers. Not like Piers Morgan, he's a twat. Some of my peers and betters, you know, from the croquet club, all went on to do
the
great.
The rifle club.
The rifle club. Yeah. My young club. I was in my young club once at school. Don't give me that look. Don't give me that look. My young is bitching. You know, they all went on to do great things. And here I am dicking around attempting to do entertain 4 or 5 alcoholics.
We worked out that we are Lady and the Tramp. And I am the Tramp.
Sorry, I thought you meant like in game, like Lady was going to end up getting a relationship with some trampy little mongrel.
No.
Oh, me and you.
Tramp, and I am the Tramp.
You
are definitely the aristocrat.
Maybe.
I mean, you were just talking about how you were in the rifling club and the mahjong club.
Oh, fuck off. You know,
Yaya the Pony Club.
Nothing. I've never been.
Yaya the Pony Club.
Do my parents own an orchard? Yes. Are they members of a bridge club? No.
Have you ever been riding like bare chested through the orchard?
What do you think I am, Vladimir
Absolutely
Putin?
Absolutely, you have.
Easy, Chanel. Like, there's some content I don't want to be around for.
Did I ever ride the gardener bareback through the orchard? No, I didn't. I mean, that's what the court case said anyway.
They can't call him the angel of decay anymore.
They can't call him. I mean, he's currently buried under the orchard. Yeah, no, but, you know, all that, you know, education. That's my first taste of D&D was we had a RPG that we were running, and it was Star Wars. And, you know, Star Wars was my first love. Did you just exhale air when I said Star Wars was my first love? Didn't just say I wanked over Yoda. Or like that's again, you expelled air.
I mean you did just say it though.
Okay, so Star Wars was my first love.
There we go.
There we go. We got a clean.
It's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
We almost got a clean cut of that, but she talked over the top of me.
Sorry, go on, say it. Again with a straight face, it's fine.
I can't. No, seriously, no. But you know, the first introduction to it, my mate Tom ran a Star Wars RPG, and same thing, different rules, but you know, dice rolls and all. And we were 4 characters on a freighter, and you know, we went on little adventures, and we ran it for one summer, and it was fucking magical. And I can't tell you whether it was any good. You know, we never recorded it. It may well have been absolute shite, but much fun was had, and it sort of, you know, it started an itch that took a long time to scratch. But I think now, yeah, I can't imagine a life without D&D. I can't imagine a world where I can't entertain people or, you know, create this sort of universe where people can come and have a laugh. And yeah, I'm really, really excited to see where this goes and see how many more people we can indoctrinate. And as Chanel says, I think D&D is a really interesting thing, but fuck me, can it be hard to break into? As you might attest to, you've got to know the right people at the right time, because D&D is not like masturbation. You can't just be like, oh, I'll give that a go. It's like you've got to actually have the right people at the right time. And many people have wanted to play D&D, for the listeners, Chris is just staring into middle distance as a single tear rolls down his cheek. Yeah, and you know, as you attested to, Chanel, you know, you can want to play. If your friends don't want to play, what do you do? COVID aside, you know, there's the local gaming clubs and things, but they, you know, D&D is a game best played with 4 or 5 people. You can play it with fewer, you could probably play it with a few more, but it gets difficult the more people who are in it. And so, you know, how do you find a group of like-minded people? And, you know, even if you found the people and they had an opening at that specific time, you may not get on with them. You may not have the same sense of humor. You may want it to be more fun. They want it to be more serious. So I think, you know, it's a real kind of privilege once you find the right people. And One of the things I'm really keen to do is, you know, see how much we can actually be more of a community of people and offer advice to people who are wanting to try their hand at D&D, because there's loads of great resources. But it can seem, you know, and again, I know loads of geeks, which would have been a profound statement 20 years ago, but now geeks are fucking everywhere, thanks to Game of Thrones. But, you know, I know loads of dyed-in-the-wool hardcore geeks who've read every bloody fantasy series going from the Wheel of Time to, you know, fucking Name of the Wind, who won't come anywhere near D&D because it's too geeky. And for a lot of people, D&D is a geek too far. You know, people feel safe in the world of Game of Thrones or World of Warcraft or Games Workshop or whatever. But for some people, D&D is a geek too far. So, you know, even if you're in a community of geeks, you may not know the right geeks to get playing. And a lot of it is serendipity. As you say, you guys had hung around for quite a while and you knew you wanted to play, but you had to wait till that exact moment where the right person happened to be strolling past who had the capabilities to play.
And I mean, how do you, like, as adults, like past a certain age, how do you, like, instantly make friends with people that you don't work with? Like, you can't just walk up to a random person in the middle of the street and be like, hey, do you want to play D&D? No,
and I think that is difficult. And as much as the internet has brought us all together in a way, and Zoom has made things like, or, you know, whatever other video streaming software is available, we're not sponsored by Zoom.
No, we are not.
Yeah, again, yeah, meeting people and knowing, you know, you're going to get on and trying that is a big thing. And for a lot of people as well, you know, I realize not everyone is mental like myself. I realize I am, like, incredibly wired up in a weird way, in that I will quite happily take risks and piss about from my background in improv and stuff. So I have no qualms about just dicking about. And I think when you're in a group of people, if you've got someone like that, if there's someone in the room who's making a bigger dick out of themselves, you feel safe to have a go at putting on a silly voice or taking a character risk, because it doesn't seem like it's gonna be out of place. But, you know, if you've just got a group of friends and none of you have ever played before, why would any of you take a risk? So it is an interesting dynamic, D&D, and can take a bit of getting into. But for most people I've ever met, once they've played once or twice, it becomes like some huge obsession and passion for them.
Yeah, I always find if we miss a session 1 week, I start to miss it. Hey, you know what they say, it's cheaper than therapy. It works. It's good. It's good to get out of your own head a little bit every now and again. And yeah, D&D is a really easy way to do that. Probably the cheapest way to do that.
For sure. I mean, actually, think about it. D&D doesn't really cost a great deal to do. It's not like, you know, following a football club halfway around the world, you know, going to matches or whatever, or drugs, you know, expensive hobby.
That was what I was alluding to when I said getting out of your own head for a little while, like, you know.
Oh, right, yeah.
You can't just like take ketamine every day and separate your mind from your body. Like,
I do, yeah, along with my morning breakfast. It's on my rider for the day. It's a very interesting game, and, you know, it opens up a lot of possibilities for people. But also, I think, you know, everyone knows someone who they think would do really well at D&D, and, you know, it's the thing, you know, you can, if you've got a safe space, you can recommend friends to play. And for creative people as well, you know, I've got many creative outs. I'm very lucky. I can write, I can paint. But there's something quite beautiful about D&D, which is exactly the same as improv, in that you create something and it's gone. You know, there's no pressure on you for it to be finished or perfect or right. You can just have a punt and do something and, you know, have a laugh. And it's very much a disposable creation that just goes. But it's amazing how attached people get to their characters, being that their characters have never lived and breathed and don't exist. It's amazing how protective people get. Like, you know, looking at Matt, who plays Belsiar, in the way he had a bunch of make-believe otters that he kept inside his robes and he accidentally murdered them. And he was poor. And it's lovely to think that, you know, he'd nursed an imaginary group of pets, and then, you know, the grief he had for accidentally murderizing his pets. Did I set him up to do that because I thought it would be funny? Maybe I did, just to see how it would affect him. Am I an evil person? Probably. Was it entertaining? Very much so.
Mm. I mean, you say that D&D is one of those things that you can just jump in, create something, and then it's gone. But you know, not anymore, pal. This is gonna live on through the archive banks of the internet for eons to come.
Yes. Yes.
Those sound bites where you said that you had set him up to murder his own beloved pets will carry on through the decades.
Yes, I imagine very much like the Watergate scandal, or you know, I probably have implicated myself at this point. But it's okay because in terms of D&D, I'm God. So you can't threaten me. But yeah, you know, as a dungeon master, it is nice to have the power to murder all your characters if they get unruly or rude. And, you know, as a benign deity, I would never do that. No.
Wow.
In real life.
Oh, you're going to poison me in real life?
In real life, I will poison you. That's,
that's ironic. Your cooking is actually quite good. I always thought you'd suffocate me with a pillow in the middle of the night.
I have so many options available to me in real life that, you know, you've given me that creative spark.
Excellent.
We'll see what happens.
Hmm. Yeah. And this is why you'll never get spoilers for the campaign.
I'm still working.
You are. You're just chipping away at me.
Genuinely, I was like, what is the point? Give me a spoiler. He was like, absolutely not. I was like, this is not what I signed up for.
He'll break eventually.
Oh, yeah, I've just got to find the right starting point. There will be one.
No, you know, most blokes, you know, when you leave your laptop lying around, you're worrying about, you know, your browsing history and porn. I'm more worried about leaving my mood boards up and, you know, Chanel discovering characters that haven't been born yet in the game.
Jesus.
But no, it's, you know, it's been a lot of fun. Will this podcast go anywhere? Yes. Who can say?
Yes.
I think it's an exciting opportunity. It's been a great resource for me just to have stuff recorded, because fuck me, trying to remember all the hundreds of characters and what people did and why they did them has been problematic. And I've had to get very organized. But having a recorded record of our adventures, I think, will be very exciting. Will this get turned into a film one day? 100%. Will Andy Serkis play Chris? Yes, more than likely. I think Freddie Prinze Jr. will probably play me. We pretty much look the same, except I'm more attractive. And why are you sniggering?
I always thought you looked a bit like a B version of Dane Bowers from Another Level, but that's fine.
This is an international podcast. As an international podcast, our viewers aren't going to have a clue who Dane Bowers is. That's so hurtful. Do you know what? I'm going to need to have a little cry. I'm just going to have to go and have a little cry. No, I think it's been really interesting and a great exercise to record this. And God knows what will become of it. And maybe this will just go in the bin, or maybe this will be the seminal voyage. Is that an expression? A seminal voyage? That sounds like someone would do at a portside brothel. That's great, because all they're going to hear is the sound effect of you spaffing into midair behind my head. Yeah, no, I'm excited to see where it goes. You know, I very much was excited to invest in some decent audio equipment to make the fidelity better. And God knows. It's worth noting at this point for anyone who's still listening to this, depending on how Chris has edited it and whomever actually gives a shit, that the main players of this campaign, by and large, have never met each other. I mean, some of them have, but in terms of the D&D game, we've never sat around a table and played.
Oh, yeah, me and, like...
I'm not saying that we're estranged lovers. I'm saying that we met on Trivia Bait or, like, Chat Roulette or something. Like, I'm saying, like, you know, a lot of games possibly start round a table with friends and then, you know, lockdown happens and you all have to play by Zoom or whatever. But for us, you know, we started this online and thus far it's all been online. The only time I've ever really seen Chris, I drove past him and I was so surprised to see one of the players that I nearly crashed my car whilst waving at him. And that's been interesting. And I don't know, maybe going forwards, we'll actually end up playing in person somewhere. And the dynamic of this campaign will change again. Who's to say?
Yeah, can't wait. It's going to be... it's going to be heaps of fun. It's going to be heaps of work, but it's also going to be heaps of fun. Yeah, I'm excited to see where I'm excited to see where it goes.
I am too. I'm excited for our slogan too. Adventurers Anonymous. Amateur explorers, professional alcoholics. No,
I think you'll find it's amateur adventurers, professional drunks.
Amateur adventurers.
Copywriter, it has to keep tweaking in the back of my mind.
Whoa. Alcoholics Anonymous. Amateur adventurers.
No.
Professional.
Nope.
Try again.
You got the first two words wrong.
What is it?
Adventurers Anonymous.
Oh. Adventurers Anonymous. Amateur explorers. Professional drunks. Brought to you in association with spacklemaps.com. Proud purveyors of stained maps for the connoisseur adventurer.
Also sponsored by Aviation Gin, Bathtub Gin, Tanqueray Gin.
Oh my God, do you remember one time when somebody stole a hip flask off someone? No, they didn't. They bummed a drink off someone in the game and they asked what it was and I had to improvise the name Felchwater as a drink. I want there somewhere out there on Etsy to be a drink called Felchwater. One day I want to walk into a bar in Sheffield and the barman look at me and be like, what'll it be? And I'll be like, a cocktail's 2 for 1. And he'll be like, they are, what will you have? And I'll be like, do you do a Felchwater? And I want him to just know what it is without having to look in his little Rolodex of cocktails. I want him to know what's
in 1983, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to find Felchwater anywhere, I'm sorry, but you're not going to find it on Etsy.
All right, I panicked. It's not like I said Gumtree or like...
Gumtree would be so much more likely.
Probably more likely to find it on Gumtree.
Do you know what?
I don't imagine Felchwater as a cocktail. I just imagine it as like bathtub moonshine.
Okay, two things.
I imagined it as somebody's dirty bath water.
Yeah, two things, right. If Felchwater was a cocktail and it came, it would be in a glass with a crusted rim. For sure. There'd be something encrusted around the rim. Secondly, I think Felchwater, do you know, like when you go to a holiday home and no one's flushed the toilet in like 3 months, you know, like your parents' holiday home and you borrow it off them and you go and someone's left a turd in the bowl and it's disintegrated into Felchwater.
I think there's a class divide here, but yeah.
Why wouldn't they have flushed the toilet, though?
Right. Just suspend disbelief for a moment. I created a fantasy drink called
Because it's in the west wing of the castle.
What castle?
In
the bungalow. Right. So, Felchwater. So, yeah, one day I would like to be sponsored by Felchwater. You know, everyone has their thing. Ryan Reynolds has aviation gin and...
David Beckham has...
AIDS. And Henry Cavill has... My lawyer has told me to inform everyone that David Beckham, in fact, does not have AIDS and is a wonderful person, happily married to a skeleton. We'll just splice that bit out. And Henry Cavill has his rosemary water stuff that he's obsessed with. What's to say one day when we're world class famous, you know, and we filled out the Sydney Opera House and people have come, you know, from around the world to see us play D&D, that we wouldn't be sponsored by the premier drink of choice, Felchwater.
I think it's a realistic goal and I support your dreams.
Thank you, because Chanel's dancing all over the broken shards of my dreams, and that's how you cut your feet.
Don't dance all over people's dreams, because that's how you cut your feet.
Exactly. My dreams are ragged shards of broken glass. Listen, I may have flown too close to the sun and got burnt with this, but one day I would love to see Felchwater on a t-shirt at least.
Felchwater by Icarus.
Oh, Felchwater by Icarus. That's got to be worth an Oscar at least.
That's going to be worth some branded merch. And, you know,
absolutely.
Felchwater disgusting, scummy wax seals around the bottle.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I could genuinely see it. You know, by the time we hit our fifth subscriber, I'd like to think that we would have a bottle of, you know, felt water to give away as a prize. Well, Chanel's yawning. And if that's told me nothing else.
I'm not yawning.
I mean, that's bullshit. I think if that tells us nothing else, it's that we should probably draw a line under this embarrassing debacle and call this a night. But if we've learned nothing else, it's that all of us are passionate about D&D and we know absolutely jack shit about podcasts. Will anyone listen to this? Who can say? Will this become podcast royalty alongside No Such Thing as a Fish and other podcasts that I clearly listen to? Angling Weekly. I don't know. What are other podcasts?
My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Red Handed. The Murder History.
Oh, you love your murder porn.
Oh, I
don't
love
you?
Murder porn.
Oh, I fucking hate murder porn.
Fucking in it for the murder porn.
Oh, all Jesus Christ.
It makes me very inventive.
Doesn't Anne Widdecombe have a podcast about dating?
Like your top 10 tips.
What? Yeah, I learned everything. I learned everything I know of Anne Widdecombe. She's like my spirit.
Anne fucking Widdecombe.
Ugh. Look, her middle name is not fucking Chris. She's a virgin. The chances of her middle name being.
That's so unfair.
What? Her being a virgin?
There's a
person
for everybody.
No, there isn't. Anne Widdecombe. No, there isn't. She's literally a self-certified singleton. She's not interested. She's taken herself out of the gene pool.
What's that creature that can defy space and time and can live on Mars that begins with T? Tardigrade? She looks like
tardigrade. That's it.
Tardigrade in a cardigan.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that. I was literally like...
That's funny. People have referred to me in this with the same sentence, actually.
It's true. I'm just beyond excited that we've got this far in this endeavor. You know, are the other people in this podcast here to defend themselves against the scurrilous remarks we've made about them? No. Was there time to invite them? Probably. Could we be bothered? No. Will this be the pattern of behavior which continues throughout this podcast? Probably.
Will AJ continue to bulk out content by asking himself questions and then answering themselves?
I am the DM. I can do whatever the fuck I want.
I'm pretty sure I'm having flashbacks to Banana Man. You know the ending. It's like...
Wasn't he Eric who lived on 27 Acacia Street? Yeah. Or some
it's
sort
like,
of
like, will Banana Man survive the next encounter? Tune in next week.
Look, do you want a roof tile to surprisingly slip off a roof and just open up Tati's jugular in the next episode? Because that can be arranged, because
you can't do it to your character. He has to do it to mine.
The listeners don't know about Maud, the shape-shifting goat fucker.
She's only a shape-shifting goat fucker because you were too lazy to write her a backstory.
Jesus
That's just
Christ.
The one he had in his back pocket.
Just, I mean, if you wonder why I'm always walking around with a limp, it's because I'm fucking carrying everyone in this campaign.
Oh, wow.
Fired by the DM.
I'm out.
Make-believe clause. It's amazing how passionate people get about bullshit that they made
you
up on the
spot. Mispronounced passive-aggressive.
I did, yes. It's also worth knowing that I had speech impediment as a child, and I've come a long way. And quite frankly, I no longer have my crippling lift. So, again, all bonus content that will never see the light of day. So, thanks for joining us today. Hopefully you've had fun. I think we have. Wherever the hell you get your podcasts from, why not consider giving us a 5-star review? Or any kind of review, quite frankly. We're not fussy. Even the recognition of your vitriolic hatred would mean the world to us. So, it's goodbye for now. But fear not, my fellow adventurers. We'll be back real soon for more beer-stained fantasy fun. So from all of us here at the gang, stay tipsy, stay safe, and we'll see you all next week. Goodbye!